Hi, everyone. Welcome back to the Pathfinder 101 podcast.
Today's guest is Mr. David Fisher, history and economics teacher at St. Mark's and chair of the History and Social Sciences Department. Thank you for your time, and let's jump right into the questions. So first, as a school student, I understand that teachers educate students at all levels, but in addition to the actual in-classroom teaching, there's a lot of planning and other activities that happen in the background. Could you briefly explain your role as a teacher with consideration to some of these other activities that also happen?
Well, you can sort of think of it the same way perhaps a diner at a restaurant experiences meals. There has to be sort of a whole kitchen, if you like, that's involved in preparing those meals. And it's something that the diner typically doesn't see. So likewise, students don't see what teachers do to get the lessons ready for the day that they experience them. But most of the time, what teachers are doing, they're reading, they're planning. Some of us spend a lot of time with calendars in front of us trying to sort of parse out how do we fit, you know, an entire syllabus into the 180 school days, and it's usually much less than that. So there's a lot of preparation that goes into lessons. Now, obviously, if you keep on teaching the same course year after year, that preparation time becomes, I'm not going to say that there's less preparations involved, but often what happens is there's more fine tuning. Again, depending on the teacher's attitude and sort of the way he or she looks at the world, there might be a lot more new stuff that gets thrown in. I teach economics. And so if I'm going to have a class that actually is meaningful to kids, I actually have to make sure that the economics I'm teaching is up to date and reflects stuff that's happening in the country, at least in that year.
And what made you to consider a career in education over the various different options available?
I think my story is very similar to that of many other teachers, certainly at St. Mark's, in that, you know, if you'd asked me at age 18, did I plan on becoming a teacher? The answer would have been hell no. I really backed into it. And it was one of those situations where I was going to teach for a little while to make some money for graduate school. Then I went to graduate school and then I looked for a job. And then teaching was something I'd already done and I liked it. So I said, okay, I'll do this for a little bit longer. Then kind of one thing led to another. And in my particular case, so I honestly just sort of woke up one morning and realized that my favorite job, because I'd done a number of different things, was teaching, and that it suited me. The kinds of things that I was interested in and the opportunity it would give me to continue traveling, because I worked in international schools, was unmatched by any other job or profession I was looking at the time. So I became a teacher. That's the short answer.
You mentioned traveling, and just from looking at your LinkedIn, there's close to three decades of traveling to various countries and different continents. Was this planned so that you could travel all over the world and experience different places?
Or? Well, I grew up, I mean, it's in my blood. I grew up overseas. I was not born in the United States. I was born in the Philippines. So I'm already sort of in a situation where, you know, I'm kind of used to not being in my own country, as it were. From the Philippines, I went to boarding school in the United States, but would travel to Spain quite a lot because I have family there. And it was just very natural for me to sort of live a peripatetic life. And that's what I wanted in terms of a career. And initially, I was looking at things like, you know, diplomacy and journalism as ways to kind of be paid to travel around. But honestly, it was international school teaching that was the most liberating, because I was a free agent and I could choose what school to work at, what country to go to. And those are not liberties that are granted to you either as a journalist or as a diplomat. So at the end of the day, that was the freest sort of profession for somebody like me.
Well, could you talk about some of the different places you've been to and maybe why you chose to teach in those places?
The very, very first place was the Philippines. And that was simply because, you know, in the same way that St. Mark's students sometimes come back to St. Mark's for either their first job, you know, people know you and so forth. So that's why I taught there. My parents were still living in the Philippines at that point. So it was one of these situations where I also wanted to sort of be near my aging parents. And that put me back in the country that I'd grown up in. But once you've worked at one international school, that kind of opens up the doors to a bunch of others. Got married, and then my wife and I had our first jobs together at an international school in Argentina, in Buenos Aires. After that, we did some graduate work in the UK, and we went on to Oman. After Oman, we worked in Bangladesh. After Bangladesh, we worked in Malaysia. And after Malaysia, well, we decided it was sort of then or never, and we came back to the United States. Because you get to the point where we could continue our lives living overseas, but if we wanted to come back to the United States, we had to come back in our early 50s rather than, you know, just simply to retire. And we hadn't even lived here together for very long. So we needed to be able to kind of build up a community. And that's what St. Mark's offered us.
Could you talk about what major you chose to pursue at Harvard and what role that plays now, or maybe why you specialize in that major over others?
Okay. That's somewhat of an interesting story. I don't know. I tell it in different ways. I ended up with a history degree, but I began claiming, and I remember like writing my application and so forth, I was going to become a Soviet studies major. This is, of course, at the end of the Cold War, and that was kind of the cool thing to do. And I read a lot of Russian history, and I liked Russian literature, and it just seemed sort of a logical thing to do. And again, you know, I was thinking of a career in diplomacy, so that seemed like the appropriate route to take. One easy reason for explaining why I didn't do that is that Russian is bloody hard, and I wanted more of a social life. So I very quickly abandoned Russian and did French, actually. That's actually was my first exposure to French, as I still wanted to learn languages. And so I knew Spanish already, and I thought, well, French was going to be a heck of a lot easier than Russian, and it was. And so I started French. But then I began sort of a tour of different majors. I just wanted to try out a bunch of different things. And honestly, I was also interested in girls and women, and they were some very, very attractive women in the comparative literature department. So that held my attention for a while. But at the end of sort of exploring, I ended up with history, which is probably where I should have started, because history was my favorite subject in high school. I like history, and that suited me very well. I was not an economist. I didn't want to do economics at that point, but history was what attracted me, and history is the degree that I eventually graduated with. So there's a little bit of a lesson there, I think, in that it might be helpful for most people to kind of have a clearer idea of what you want to major in when you go to college, rather than to spend a lot of time exploring. Exploration is good, but you should probably do it around the edges rather than in your core field.
That's a great point. There's always room for exploring at any stage. Mm-hmm. You mentioned economics. Could you talk about like your interest in that and how that sort of entered your life?
Again, I think that came with academic maturity. I don't think I would have made a very good economist in my early 20s, and certainly not my teens. I sort of backed into economics just sort of, you know, as a history teacher, realizing that, you know, this is an essential way of looking at the world. I'm just interested in how societies work, and that's what also explains my interest in government and international relations. And I felt that without economics knowledge, my understanding of quote unquote how the world works would be incomplete. So I ended up taking some courses, I ended up teaching myself, and I ended up also seeking out opportunities to teach economics when it came up to me, some of the schools that I was at. And I eventually became an economics teacher at my last school. And that was, in fact, my principal employment for many years. And one of the reasons why I ended up teaching at St. Mark's. So it was it's kind of strange that I began a career as a historian. And most of the kids who I knew earlier in my career know me as a history teacher. Kids later in my career know me as an economics teacher, which is kind of interesting. But that kind of explains why. I can add on to that at many of the schools, at the international schools that I was teaching at in the 1990s and the 2000s, the writing was on the wall that if you wanted to keep a job at an international school and you wanted to teach in the social sciences, you had to teach economics. Fewer and fewer kids were signing up for history classes. And so you needed to be adaptable. And that's another life lesson that I do try to pass on to everybody is that, you know, you can learn one thing, but be prepared to keep on learning throughout the rest of your life and be prepared to change. And you should actually kind of like change rather than want to avoid it. And that's been my experience, and it's been a good experience.
That's a great advice. While teaching is the main career in the educational sector, there are other critical roles like administration or counseling. In addition to teaching, you're also the chair of the History and Social Sciences Department. And you also played the college counselor role in like one of your previous schools that you worked at. Mm-hmm. Could you explain some of the additional responsibilities you had in these roles?
Well, again, as you pointed out, one way to look at it is education is all about teaching. We're all teachers, no matter what we do. But there are many different ways to teach, shall we say. And one of the reasons why I like education as a profession is that you can play different roles. You can be, as you say, an administrator. You can be a counselor. You can be an instructor of various subjects in the classroom. Mind you, I've taught economics, I've taught history, but I've also taught drama, I've also taught English. So there's different things that I've done, and I really like that. I like the fact that there's been a lot of variety in my professional experience. As for being an administrator, one of the problems of the teaching profession is that traditionally, if you want to get ahead, quote unquote, as a teacher, you have to kind of give up teaching and become an administrator, right? Become a principal of a school or become a headmaster. And so for a while, in the 1990s, I wanted to become sort of a headmaster. And I had a role that was sort of a headmasterish role at one of the schools I taught at, but I hated it. Again, that you only find those things out once you try it. And so I realized that I was quite happy to sort of be in middle level management because I like sort of organizing things and certainly don't mind being the head of the history department and so forth. But I did not want to become, you know, a school principal. So that was an avenue I tried out and then moved away from. College counseling was related to that because when I had that role as sort of the school head, I was sort of the head of curriculum, but eased myself into sort of university guidance as a way to kind of do things that I wanted to do. I was interested in education. I was interested in getting kids ready for university and so forth. And that's the role that I was most comfortable in. So I kind of created for myself the role of the as university counselor at one of my schools. And then I went to another school and that role was given to me one more time. So again, I took on that job at another school. So it was for a good 5-6 years of my life that I worked sort of as a university counselor, not so much as a guidance counselor, because I didn't help people with their social and psychological counseling, but helping them get into university. And so, yeah, that was kind of fun. And again, I liked it because it was something different and sort of added another dimension, another layer to my experience as an educator.
Can you talk about why you decided to teach in a private school like St. Mark's, or what different events led to you teaching here over maybe a couple?
Well, okay, international schools, that was my profession for 25 years or more. So international schools are private schools. They're just private schools overseas, and they serve the expatriate, in my case, the English-speaking expatriate communities of the different countries or different cities that I was in. So moving from that environment to a private school environment wasn't going to be particularly challenging. I've never worked in the public schools, though I am certified to teach interestingly enough, in Michigan public schools, but that's another story. What I like about the private school system and the international school system is at the end of the day, there is a lot of respect you have as a teacher. And I think one of the problems that many teachers have who go into the public school system is, yes, you're doing a public service, which I think is incredibly important, but often the conditions of work are not very attractive. And even though there is a fair amount of job security that you get as a public school teacher, there isn't a lot of respect for the profession. And that's different, certainly in the international schools and also at most private schools, certainly at St. Mark's. So the loss of prestige or the lack of prestige that one might experience in the public schools, I have not felt at the private schools. And that's one of the reasons why I've stuck with private school teaching. But I like teaching generally. But there's no question that I also like the fact that in private schools, in international schools, I'm hired primarily, I think, to teach the subjects that I'm interested in. I can teach economics, I can teach history, and so forth. And I'm less concerned with crowd control, which is often what happens in a public school situation. And that, again, is one of the problems I think many public school teachers face.
You brought up that you were licensed to teach in Michigan, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
Are there any sorts of licensing requirements for private schools?
In most private schools in the United States, no. There might be some private schools that have it as their, just might require it for their, to get a job at that particular private school, you need a public certification. But that is generally the difference between private schools and public schools in the United States. Private schools can hire whomever they want. And often that means you can hire somebody with a PhD in mathematics and they can come and teach in the private school and there's no problem. Whereas that same person, although they know quite a lot about mathematics, might not be able to teach in a public school because they don't have the teacher certification. Kind of a little silly, though there's some logic to it. Again, might be worth discussing. I got my teacher certification because to teach in international schools, you needed the teacher certification to get work visas. Because if you think about it, to work, let's say in Malaysia, you have to prove to the Malaysian government that you are a professional teacher. The way you prove you are a professional teacher is you have a teaching license. So in the United States, we grant licenses by the state is responsible for granting licenses. So why did I get mine from the state of Michigan? Many, many years ago, the Michigan State University ran summer programs that licensed teachers in France. And so I went to the summer program of Michigan State University and got my teacher license that way and have kept it updated ever since. And like I said, I think many private school teachers sort of, you know, poo-poo the idea that they have to get credentialed. And there is a bit of a silliness about it. Though I honestly did learn quite a few things in my teacher training program. And so I think teacher training is an important experience, but I'm not so sure that just because you have a piece of paper that says you're a teacher means you necessarily are a good teacher. So at the end of the day, I think experience is important, but teachers probably, you know, could take a class or two in teaching, and that would be good for them as well.
Could you briefly talk about like how a typical workday or work week looks like for you, maybe including daily responsibilities, just hours, and whether you have to do like a lot of work on weekends or maybe during holidays?
Again, I think the workload depends a lot on how long you've worked in a particular school, for instance. So if you're a new teacher at St. Mark's, I think your workload is 100% more than your veteran counterpart, because the veteran counterpart has the schedules worked out, has routines in place, doesn't have to prepare brand new classes, right? And it's that sort of work in the back kitchen that takes up a lot of time. So when I speak about what my quote unquote typical day is, I'd be speaking as somebody who has worked at St. Mark's now for 6 or 7 years. And so I've got my routines in place. So as a veteran teacher, I show up at, you know, 7:30 in the morning or 7 o'clock in the morning, prepare classes, or in my case, because I'm department head, I might go through some administrative work. Then you teach those classes. And then, you know, once you teach a class, you're obviously, you know, dealing with student work that comes in at that point. So you're going to be grading. You have to have open office hours because kids are stopping in all the time to talk to you, and you need to be able to talk to them. So it's a scheduled environment. We live by schedules, right? But at the same time, we have to be flexible. That idea of having your door open so that people come in and talk to you. As a department head or as any administrator, you also have to put out fires occasionally. Hopefully not real ones, but, you know, the metaphorical ones at the very least. And then on the weekend, it's not a typical weekend like it would be for most 9-to-5 jobs. Yeah, you're thinking about the week that's coming up, and you usually have to devote, you know, at least an afternoon on the weekend to preparing for the week ahead. There's a lot of planning that goes in that's involved. There's a lot of reading. It's one of the reasons why I actually like my job as a teacher, is that I get to read a lot, and you, at the very least, have to read more than the students. So every teacher has a story about a class that they've taught that they've never taught before, where they're just literally, you know, a chapter ahead of the students. And that's a situation I'm no longer in, but I remember being in. And it's very challenging, but you know, but to a certain extent, we're always in that kind of a situation where, okay, yeah, you know, I know my economics textbook, but it's been a long time since I've done, I don't know, externalities, right? So what are the high notes? And so I'll have to quickly look at that material before I start teaching it again, so I'm able to at least, you know, respond to questions and so forth. So that happens all the time.
Based on the knowledge you have today, I know you earlier mentioned that if you could like redo maybe the college process, you would just like focus more in on history instead of maybe exploring like so many different options. Are there any other like tidbits or advice that you would have for like just going through the college process or beyond?
Sure. Well, there's the process, the applications process, and then there's your attitude at university, and then how you plan your life. I'm speaking now from the vantage point of a 57-year-old thinking about, you know, what 18-year-olds should do. Clearly, for you guys as seniors, the earlier you can get your college applications in and done and out of the way, the better. So that whole process should be done relatively quickly, should be done over the summer, and don't think about it during the year, because that just takes your attention away from your classes, and you should be focused on trying to do well in your classes, because you're in another world once you start applying to universities. And I know this also because I have my son who's applying to colleges this year, and I've been sitting on him, and he's been pretty good at it, at getting his stuff done now, because he doesn't have time to think about applications later. So that's one, that's the process. Process number two is, I do think it's useful to plan what it is that you want to study and to leave yourself some room for exploration, but it helps to be academically mature. Again, I don't think I was when I was 18, and looking back on it, gosh, I think I could have been a lot more successful as a college student had I just sort of carried through with some initial ideas I had that I hadn't let sort of mature. I think there's absolutely nothing wrong with people who like English literature majoring in English literature, people who like history majoring in history, people who like folklore and mythology, go ahead and study folklore and mythology. But make sure there are also a few courses there that, let's say, make your parents happy. So the folklore and mythology kids should have a few courses in statistics and economics, because at the end of the day, it may be kind of difficult to find a job as a folklorist, and you may have to end up working in business and having sort of basic marketable skills. And often these are skills in quantification as part of your course of study, I think is very useful. And that's one of the nice things about the American education system, is that you don't have to specialize very early and always treat a university education just as pre-professional training. You are encouraged in the liberal arts system to carry through to a reasonable end your interest in history or English or languages and so forth. And that's great. But at the same time, university is about preparing for the world of work. And so there should be elements of what you study that are marketable. And I think that's something that everybody needs to be aware of. Sometimes it's the reverse. Sometimes kids are too focused on that, and so everything they do is about marketability. And I think that's wrong too. There needs to be a blend. Everybody, I think, needs to focus on studying something that he or she really likes, but at the same time, keep an eye open to preparing yourself for the world of work that's eventually going to come. So that would be my advice to people. It's wonderful to go to university. It's a great experience, but use it wisely, both to prepare yourself for the world of work and also to expand your mental horizons, which is, of course, I think, ultimately what it should be about.
Yeah, those are some great points, especially the one where you mentioned like dabbling a little bit of the quantity or quantification like skills and some of the other skills. Without going into specifics, how does the compensation look in a private school setting or international school?
It's interesting you're asking me that. I was just watching earlier a CNN report about public school teachers and about the fact that there are apparently 300,000 teaching jobs that are going unfilled, I think nationally, because there's a shortage. And this is related in large part to relatively low pay that public school teachers experience. Now, you may think, oh, and the private sector, no problem. It's a problem in the private sector. I'm not going to say St. Mark's. I'm not going to get into the specifics for St. Mark's, but St. Mark's, along with a few other schools, we may have discussed this in economics class, where tries to cater to one end of the teaching market so that it can keep those teachers for a long time. So we're reasonably well compensated as teachers in the private school system. But most private schools actually pay very poorly. And most private schools actually pay less than the public school system. Or if you add up sort of all the dollars and cents and the privileges and the benefits and so forth, private schools can't offer the same amount of job security and benefits that the public system does. So private school teaching is a very precarious profession for many teachers. Like I said, St. Mark's is really not in that category, and that's great. I probably am like digging my own grave here, because now there goes my raise, because everybody's going to think Mr. Fisher's happy with his pay. No, pay me more. But it is a concern, and I speak for the profession in this respect. I'm fortunate to work at a school that compensates me well. But that isn't the case of the vast majority of teachers, both in public school teaching and in private school teaching. And that's something that needs to be addressed on a national level. And how you do that is very complex. And of course, it isn't just about money, because if you just throw money at a situation, that doesn't necessarily make it better. Well, it doesn't make it a lot better. It could make it a little bit better, but it's only part of the solution to a much bigger problem that has to do with respect, that has to do with ensuring that teachers are paid to do the job that they want to do. I think there are a lot of people who want to teach. That's not often what happens. A lot of people get into teaching thinking they're going to teach, and they end up becoming social workers, end up becoming childminders, putting out a lot of fires that they have absolutely no training or interest or capability in putting out. And that's a problem.
On the topic of putting out fires, a great deal of the teacher job is, of course, dealing with other students. So I guess like dealing with a group of teenagers, it's not an easy job. So in your
view, that's an attraction, right? I mean, again, you don't get into this job if you don't like being with teenagers. That would be horrible. And likewise, middle school teachers shouldn't be middle school teachers if they don't like middle school age kids and elementary school teachers with elementary school kids. You have to like kids to be a teacher. And hopefully also you like the age group that you're largely responsible for. And at the same time, you have to be willing to, you know, to try out different things. I've tried out teaching middle school before. And, you know, I used to be very snooty about teaching younger kids. But actually, you know, as I get older, I actually kind of enjoy teaching younger kids. So that's less of a problem. But fundamentally, I like being with young people, you know, because it's, again, it's interesting. It's that variety that I think keeps me alive and keeps me coming to school every day. And I think that's true for most teachers. And often most teachers, I think if you get them backed up into a corner, they'll say they actually prefer working with young people than with other people our own age. And I think that's a universal experience.
Do you have any final thoughts or comments to share before we end this podcast?
Well, one of the things we haven't talked about is, you should a graduate of a school like St. Mark's, where, you know, you could go off and become a doctor, a lawyer, an engineer, and so forth, should you consider becoming teachers? I think so. And again, it doesn't surprise me that somebody like Mr. Hilliers ends up becoming a teacher at his old private school and may end up having a career teaching, either continuing to teach here or at other private schools and so forth, because this is the environment we're kind of comfortable with and enjoy. I think anyone who's interested in education, right? And I don't just mean that as, you know, necessarily a career, but literally as a vocation. You like learning things and you like sharing what you learn, should consider teaching as a career. For some, that may end up becoming a professor at a university. For others, I would say really give a thought to teaching at the secondary school level, because I think there's more joy to be had at the secondary school level. And here again, I can point to a few other St. Mark's teachers who I know have this experience. They've got the doctoral degree. They have the experience working at universities, but you don't get the same day-to-day personal reward and intellectual excitement that you can get teaching close up with kids who are in their teens, who are for the first time coming across the material that you have fallen in love with and want to share with other people. So it's a great profession. My only thing to make people aware of is not, it's not a profession that you're going to get rich at. So no, this is not the road to riches. And hopefully, you know, as time goes on, maybe the compensation for teachers will increase and it will become at least a profession where you can live a good life. And that, I think, is what most teachers want. They don't necessarily want to become rich, but they don't want to be poor forever or necessarily, you know, somebody's sidekick and let their spouse be the doctor or the lawyer to make the money. You need to be able to sort of maintain a good middle class lifestyle. And I think you can certainly do that at St. Mark's. It's not often true at other schools, but perhaps as the future unfolds, that will become more the reality than it is the exception right now.
Thanks to everyone who's listening for choosing to spend your time with this podcast. I really appreciate it. Please be sure to check out pathfinder101.com for more information like this. Thank you again, and have a great rest of your day.